When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to Why We Do What We Do.
All right, welcome to Why We Do What We Do. I'm going to be your penny-pinching host, Abraham.
And I'm going to be your Ain't No Scrubs host, Shane.
All right. And we are a psychology podcast. We like to dig into all the weird, unknown things in psychology. Sometimes we get into things that are very well known, and sometimes we do these like how-to episodes. And this topic that we're covering today is kind of a combination of those things.
Yeah.
So we're talking about how we manage money, and this is both why we're bad at it and how we can get better.
Yeah. It's a little from column A, a little from column B, as Abe Simpson says every now and again.
Yeah. And also the genie on Aladdin.
Oh yeah. I guess he does do that too. What a great movie. Aladdin's such a great movie.
Indeed. Okay. Shane, I'll let you kick us off.
So you can't take it with you, but why does it seem so precious? I'm so excited I got to do my Gollum voice for this. That's so good. And also, like, if you ever try to do a Gollum voice, if you can do a Lilo and Stitch voice,
okay,
which is Ohanaman's family, you just like make it like a little bit more gruff, and then you've got Gollum.
Got it.
Just like, there's another how-to for y'all.
Yeah, like that's excellent coaching. Right at the top of this, we lead in with that golden nugget. You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome, folks. So money may take on a reinforcing value for its very possession, right? Having money might have like some kind of rewarding value to it, despite that it's backed by countless more valuable items. So like, you know, like basically money is just like backed by precious gems and stones and rocks and stuff like that. So it's like kind of funny how we've gotten here. We've done a whole episode on money and whatnot, so you can definitely go listen to that.
Yeah.
Still, some folks simply can't resist their inner Scrooge McDuck diving into just pools of gold coins.
Ouch.
The physics of that are just painful.
Yeah.
But people are seduced by acquiring more and more cash flow with no intention or realistic opportunity to ever spend it all in their lifetime. Others spend a few cents they have, channeling their inner Carrie Bradshaw with too many Jimmy Choo shoes, which is just kind of a horrible tongue twister. So thank you, Alan, for that one.
Speaking of which, we'll thank Alan at the top here and at the end for his putting together the notes on this. One of our premier writers.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so fun.
All right, now, so we just spent time, and time is money, so we just spent money talking about money and talking about people spending the money that they have, whether they're spending it wisely or hoarding it away. Others, of course, will ride phallic-shaped rockets into the not-so-outer space with Captain Kirk. On that note, good for you, William Shatner, who's still doing it at 90. It's amazing.
Yeah. Good for him.
I mean, not that he was doing it before. This is his first time in space, but
yeah.
It's amazing that he was able to do that. So round of applause.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, all of us are out there trying to make money. We can't all be sexy, hippie Instagram influencers living in the Maldives, bungalows, or vans in South America promoting stone and dirt diets. You know, some of us have to have other ways of making money. Most of us, in fact, we all can't be Ryan's toys.
Damn you, Ryan!
Making millions and millions of dollars for playing with toys like kids used to, you know. Most of us have to choose a different path.
Yeah, for the rest of us, we have an income, hopefully enough to survive, which is kind of an interesting revolt going on in the United States right now about living wages,
yeah,
which is probably worth talking about at some point in time. And it's up to us to allocate it in a financially wise way in order to support ourselves and our families. So unfortunately, a lot of people really, really struggle with this for a number of reasons, but you know, as host of the show, we're behavior analysts. And to quote the great Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. So we're here to help you. You just need to listen to this 45-minute, maybe hour, likely, because it's an Alan episode, podcast about timeshares in Aruba.
That's right. So, do you have any timeshares? Do you want a timeshare in Aruba? Just kidding. This is why I don't sell timeshares.
I'd be horrible at that. Like, you want this? Oh, you don't? That's fine.
I think I've sat through two or three of these meetings, so I could probably emulate them if I really tried.
Yeah.
But I was a little distracted by them trying to throw pseudosciencey things at me to like be attention grabby things.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, we don't yawn, or you know, we yawn because we don't get enough oxygen to our brain. I said, so if I stifle a yawn, am I going to have a stroke and die?
I love that. Like the scientist in the anti-science crowd, just like debunking. Yeah. It's like that would throw somebody's sales pitch off so quickly.
Right. When it's one of those things where it's just like they punctuate them. Man, we should actually talk about like how to do these sales pitches because that'd be fun. Because there's actually built in. They strategically place these little nuggets of like off topic things to make it more entertaining and to also like bring your attention back.
Yeah.
There is a strategy in presenting where you randomly make a joke, laugh, or tell a non sequitur story. Because then if your audience was drifting, all of a sudden they're like, wait, what is going on? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
salespeople know this. So,
which is literally what we just did.
Yeah. How did we get here on this topic? And really, how did we get here talking about money? All right. We're going to take a quick break for some advertisements for you and be back soon.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We were just talking about that very few people have money saved and how things are really expensive. Let's move on. So from everyone from economists, professors, psychologists, your drunk uncle, your drunk aunt, your drunk person, your friend with the red plastic cup, they all have an opinion on what's driving Americans into saving less money and effectively putting themselves in these financial dire straits. I mean, not everyone's doing the sort of blame the victim game, but some people are. But the point is everyone has an idea. So there's the rising price of college, food, rent, healthcare, all in contrast with a slower rise in wages. And those are things that are relevant factors to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2016, a cover story in The Atlantic showed a survey by the Federal Reserve Board. In that study, respondents were asked how they would handle a $400 sudden emergency bill. And a whopping 47% of respondents indicated they would need to borrow or sell something or simply not be able to cover the bill at all, which is... There's different things that we could talk about within that, you know, like universal healthcare and all that, but that's not a good space to be in.
I feel like that would be stressful. And I imagine that for those people that is even asking the question can feel stressful.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them are sort of like, what are you going to do? But
yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so that's sort of a understanding the climate, if you will, of where we're at with this particular things. But it is interesting also to look at sort of where people are currently. In 2019, Bankrate.com released a study in which they surveyed 1,000 working American adults on how much of their annual income they put aside for things like retirement, emergencies, other financial pursuits, etc. The results of the study were that about 20%, so 1 in 5 people, didn't save anything at all. Mm-hmm. Of the remaining 4 out of the 5, or the 80% that did, 20% saved 5% or less of their income, mm-hmm. and just 16% were saving more than 15% of what they earn. So in general, a little under 70% of Americans were saving less than 10% of their income. There's a lot of numbers, but essentially suffice it to say that most people are saving very small amounts of money if they're saving anything at all. I think that's the way to summarize that without having to really focus on those numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how much is the right amount to save, right? And unfortunately, there is not a hard and fast answer that I'd love to be able to come up with for myself, because were I amazing at money management, this podcast would probably sound different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd still be doing it, but it would sound different. Mostly just because we could put a lot of people in time in it. Justin does an amazing job. Yeah, yeah. It's on totally on me, not on anybody else on the team. Anyway, there's so many factors it depends on. One of the things that you probably know of our listeners in and outside of the United States is where you live is a huge part of this, right? If you have people who depend on you, that's another huge part of this. What your life goals are, what you feel like you need to be happy, and then a myriad of other things that we'll get into. It's difficult to calculate what is the right amount because it's so uniquely individual to everybody's circumstance, and everybody's circumstance is unique.
Yeah.
And so there is one thing we can all agree on, and that mishaps of everyday life spare no one.
Right.
Some people get really lucky, but a lot of people who were really lucky get really unlucky, and people who were unlucky get lucky. Your tires go flat, your windows break, your headphones stop working, you lose one of your AirPods.
Yeah, yeah.
Your rent will inevitably do. You might forget, you know, your rain jacket when you get on the train, and then all of a sudden it's flooding where you are at. There's things that we can't predict, and we get unlucky.
Yeah, I believe Alanis Morissette wrote a whole song about that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like rain on your wedding day.
Indeed, and good advice that you just can't take.
Well, it's like having too many spoons when all you need is a knife.
That's right. The rest of this episode will be a speaking in slam poetry style lines from Alanis Morissette songs.
We are avid Jagged Little Pill fans here, apparently.
You ought to know.
So the saddest part of all the information above, or that we kind of just went over, is that, again, it was collected and released in 2019. These figures that we're talking about point to some grim saving habits for Americans already. And as we enter the COVID-19 pandemic and its associated financial squeeze that has actually strangled the global economy, we find that there are even more challenges to face at this point in time. So even those who might have saved specifically before the pandemic might have found themselves dipping into the emergency fund when a true emergency showed up at all our doors, like when people were losing their jobs and there were mass layoffs and all that, you find that people are kind of scrambling at this point. Those who had recurring investments prior to COVID and experienced no change in job status might make it out okay, but we find that many others experienced traumatic job disruption, unfortunately, that may have severely impacted their patterns. So long-term effects of the pandemic on saving and financial habits in general remain to be seen, given that we are still in a pandemic.
Now, Shane, do you have a plan for retirement financially?
No, I don't, actually.
Then you are not alone. The Stanford Center on Longevity Project claimed in 2019 that to comfortably retire at 65 while maintaining a standard of living, one must put 10 to 17% of their current income into a retirement account. So if you start saving at age 25, hope enough of our listeners are under 25 right now, or have access to a time machine, then you can start doing this and planning for savings. But for those of us who are well past 25, which includes the hosts and most of the team of this show, that is a big ask.
Yeah.
Like, we're already not saving, you know, very much. I was fortunate to get in relatively early at my company with a matched retirement savings plan, and also started like privately squirreling away money for that. But I don't even think with that I'm going to be able to comfortably retire at 65.
Nope.
Assuming I make it that long.
I genuinely don't plan to retire. It has not even crossed my mind, given how much I actually enjoy working. Like, I have not even thought to be like, I should retire. Like, it's just not even on, it's not even on my radar.
You heard it here first, folks. This podcast will go on until you outlive us.
Forever.
That's right. Well, we'll get new hosts and then it'll go on forever.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, we're like the James Bond of podcasts.
Daniel Craig is next.
Daniel Craig
as the host. That's right. We cycle. As soon as they stop being James Bond, then they come host the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we expect Pierce Brosnan and, well, not Sean Connery at this point, but yeah, Somebody will come in. So yeah. It doesn't help that, according to CNBC, middle class life is now 30% more expensive than it was 20 years ago. Housing and childcare both have risen significantly. Public college costs doubled from 1996 to 2016, but LSU just got a lazy river. So, you know, that's cool. You know, some schools have these like awesome things. Housing prices near some popular cities have quadrupled. And of course, salaries have remained more stagnant than ever. So wages are not increasing to match the changing economy.
And that's one of the things I think that many people, they think that they're critically evaluating this and they say, well, yeah, prices have gone up, but also people make more money now. They do make more money now, but not by as much as the prices have gone up. And other people I think will point to, and they're correct, that there are some things that prices have stayed relatively flat on for a long time. We had this really weird golden period where gas just did not go up for like a very long time.
Yeah.
And we got really lucky, I think, with that being it was a relatively flat thing, and that did help a lot of people for sure. But rent and mortgages have just been inflating like unstoppable balloons that are never going to pop because of the powers that be. But
there's always a bailout, baby.
There's always a bailout. Yeah. So what's unfortunate definitely in this is that the cost of living, just generally speaking, like, cool, a small thing like a tank of gas is relatively cheap, but the thing that you're spending most of your money on, your rent and your insurance and stuff, those things are just up, 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 up all the time.
Yeah.
Without stop.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
Okay. Further theories published in The Atlantic suggest that toward the 1990s, wages stagnated despite massive growth in mortgages, and people who were skating on the edge wound up as homeowners despite not having the capacity to handle the mortgage that they obtained. And for reference, mortgages were handed out like they came from Oprah. You get a mortgage and you get a mortgage.
Yep. Everyone gets a mortgage.
Additionally, U.S. policies make it easier to borrow and spend money than you should be able to do because there's obviously some money in that as well. And essentially, what was happening was that there were some good things that came out of this, at least in the sense that there were a lot of people who became homeowners who could have never have been homeowners before. And that's a really good thing. Like, we saw a really big rise in this sort of class of people who all of a sudden had access to homes. The problem was because there was lending that was allowing people who couldn't then pay those mortgages back to occur, that as soon as it got to the place where that sort of debt all folded in on itself, those people, again, were not in a position to own those homes anymore.
Yeah.
So it was a temporary respite and created a giant problem.
And also part of it, too, is that there are additional expenses beyond what is lent out, right? So, like, you know, you might get a mortgage for $800, but they don't talk about all the other things that compound on top of that. So, like, that, it's like, it's kind of like when kids are like, I have $5, that's $4.99, I can afford that. It's like, oh, but tax, honey.
Right.
Like, surprise, like that kind of thing happens in that space too, but like, you know, to the tune of thousands of dollars. So now, even with all that, like just like kind of that particular piece, and that's an oversimplification of that, obviously. We have to understand first why we suck so much at saving money. So this list is going to come from BeTheBudget.com. Commentary from this is going to come from Alan. So as we go through this list, we're going to have fun with this.
Yeah, some of this will be real and some of this will be Alan.
Yeah. And that's kind of the nature of the podcast at this point.
All right. So the first one is a lack of understanding of personal finances, which is not going to be everybody, but a lot of people fall into this category. But what I mean by this, a translation for lack of understanding, there's no establishment of financial responsibility skills, which again is true for some people, not everyone.
Yeah. And so a way to remedy this would be to make such skills a focus in general education curriculums. I mean, how many times do you hear people talking about specifically getting tax classes, finance classes, stuff in like their high school rather than having to learn it as an adult? I can build a wall. I can do that. I can wire it and all that, but that's not useful in my day-to-day stuff. My finances would be a much more useful class. So we should have prioritized financial classes over igneous rocks, covalent bonds, learning the Cotton Eye Joe song, like all that stuff. We could have poo-pooed that and learned, you know, how to do basic taxes and whatnot.
So, for example, doing a monthly budget, balancing a checkbook, which may be completely obsolete at this point.
Yeah.
Setting up auto pay. That's a really good one. I actually love auto pay. It's one of my favorite things. I don't love the fact that it takes my money, but I do love the fact that it unburdens my time. So I'm good on that front.
Yeah.
Utilizing credit card reward bonuses. This could be a dangerous territory, but there is a potential remedy there. Systematically paying off debt. handling loans, identifying the price of becoming a Patreon subscriber, which has only benefits.
Yes, only benefits, just so you all know. So yeah. On that note, please become a Patreon with us. So another reason why we suck at this is because we are unprepared for emergencies or unexpected finances. Like, so some kind of cost is going to come up at random. So in adult life, there's always something, and that something could be anything. You know, you could get sued by your grouchy landlord because of a small oil stain on your driveway. And, you know, you can end up at small claims court because of stuff like that. Your basement could flood. Your kid could hit a backyard home run through the kitchen window. Your car's side view mirror gets knocked off in New York City. I feel like this is Alan's had a lot of very specific experiences with these things. Like, it's like, yeah, the more as we go through it, it gets more specific.
Yeah.
You forgot to renew your registration and you owe $200 in DMV fines. The last thing you want to do in any of the above circumstances is to take on credit debt, because you're going to end up paying more as a result of that. So being prepared for these things can be kind of a challenge.
Or an example that maybe is more relatable and definitely is for me is suddenly discovering a leak in your house that then you didn't have to call to get fixed and maybe has done a bunch of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that'll do it.
So a remedy for this is to set up a recurring payment into an alternative fund/account or budget a certain amount of money each month to be set aside to never use other than in case of an emergency, along with your Patreon subscription fee. And actually, I'll say this is something I did that I just started setting up, that one of my accounts would automatically transfer every month a certain amount of money into another account where I wouldn't ever touch that account. And then that way there was just always money going into it. So in the off chance that I desperately needed some cash, I would always have some sitting aside. And then also I try and regularly get cash back at, like, when I do like debit transactions, mm-hmm, I would just take a few of the dollar bills sort of left over that and just stick them in like a box that I have sort of hidden. Yeah. And so that way I'm like, if I were ever like truly, truly desperate, I would actually have some cash on hand. Not a lot, but some.
And I think one thing that is kind of like an important caveat to this is, like, this is if you have the ability to have some kind of expendable cash. Like, there are some right. folks out there that literally don't have the ability to do this. I mean, I remember when my daughter was first born, I mean, I would overdraft my bank account every month just to pay my bills.
Man.
Like, and that was with living on ramen. That was, you know, buying the cheapest diapers. That was all the things that I was supposed to be doing. Like, I couldn't really get out of that hole. So there are some folks that don't have this expendable income just for emergencies, and you just kind of have to scrape stuff together where you can.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely worth acknowledging that always. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good.
So the money that you put away for this could either be like a flat rate where you put together like, you know, a few $100s, or maybe like, you know, $10, you know, whatever it is, you kind of just throw something into that fund, or a percentage of your paycheck, the same way you might approach savings for retirement. You might just put a little bit away just to kind of have that rainy day money just in case.
Another reason that we're not very good at this oftentimes is not living on a budget. Translation, no existence of an itemized plan each month where your income will be allocated toward only certain things. It's very easy, I think, to get in a comfortable position of, I can spend it, and I'm gonna.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially for folks that like instant gratification.
Right.
Right. I've learned that, like, it's very easy for people to spend money when they don't see it, like, leaving their bank account. Like, when you can do, like, automatic pay and stuff like that, or, like, when you can do transactions that are like, buy it now, it's very easy to not think about, like, how much is coming out of your account during those times.
Yeah, it adds up really fast. But If you do have this budget, this could help you do things like save up for a car, pay for school, do a down payment on a house, go on your dream vacation, get an engagement ring, a new computer, a new set of golf clubs, become a Patreon subscriber. Any of those things would work.
Yeah. What you can do if you don't live on a budget now is you can actually create an itemized list of how all of your money each month will be allocated and leave some at the end for extraneous or slush fund purchases. So, like, you might need to kind of put together what your current expenses are to be able to itemize that and look at what's going out. It's very much so like a systems analysis, you know, what goes in, what goes out, and what's left over as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing is the reason we suck at this is because sometimes we have, you know, a lot of credit card debt.
Ooh.
And this is, as Alan describes, this is a big no-no. And here's why. You know, this is one of the most daunting situations to find yourself in, because basically you've borrowed money and you're having to pay it back plus.
Right.
That's how credit card companies make their money. It's like, they're not giving you money for free. And they're like, yeah, you can borrow this, just pay me back equally. They're like, no, you're going to pay me back at a premium so that I can make some money off of this too. And it's just basically you're making money. They're making money off of debt. So,
yeah.
And there's no judgment to people who fell into this due to some kind of difficult circumstances. It's nice to have something like as a backup in case you need to. But if you can actively prevent winding up in the situation, it would be wise to do so. The reason being is that high interest rates will squeeze your life harder than the mountain did to the Viper in season 4 of Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert, because I have not watched Game of Thrones. So thanks, Alan, for that. Now, even paying the minimum each month is unlikely to ever dig you out. And you're going to see this when we talk about student loans as well.
The remedy for this, get into a healthy budgeting system as early as possible in life. That will just save you a lot of headache down the road. One of the things that people commonly fight about in relationships and other partnerships and even just for friendships is money. And so preventing that from being an issue early is going to feel good.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Another reason that this can be really difficult is because there are a lot of debts that a lot of people accrue just because it is the nature of getting by in the world. And one of those is car payments. So listen, I understand that in some areas you just need to have a car. There are a few places in this country with a lot of people where you don't need to have a car. But outside of those places where there's still millions more people, you absolutely cannot really get by without access, consistent access to a vehicle of some kind. It is what it is. But if you only drive once in a blue moon, winter longer, maybe a few Ubers per month will add up less than a car payment, gas, insurance, car wash, etc. Let's be real, though. You haven't had your car washed in a year. You drive with your tank near the E line like it's your job. But if you're 35, maybe stop doing those things as much. And fellas, a cool car yields no ladies ever. Maybe in New Jersey. As the snarky Twitter folks say, I don't know who needs to hear this, but grease ain't real life.
Cool cars don't work. They don't work.
Yeah.
Not that I ever drove a cool car. I drove like a crappy like Cavalier, and then I had like a hatchback for a little while. So like I'm not like one to like ever have driven a cool car. So I don't know. My brother's a race car driver, and it doesn't seem to work for him either. So,
well, and then and let's keep this a little more gender neutral. It could be people. A cool car yields no willing partners. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there you go. No consenting partners.
Yeah. Unconsenting, maybe, but just kidding.
All right. So another issue, you know, the reason why we might suck at this is that you might be house poor, a term that Alan put into quotes, house poor. Now, what this means is that you might have bitten off more than your termites can chew when you bought a house. So if you're pumping an obscene amount of your paycheck into your home and it's all lovely fees and fixes, you might not have any left to put towards savings or other needs. And again, this comes down to healthy budgeting systems. What projects are necessary versus what are vanity projects and how to build. There's a lot of stuff that kind of goes into that. But sometimes people will purchase a house and then discover that all the stuff needs to be replaced later. You might have like piping that wasn't caught in the inspections. There's all kinds of stuff that you can discover after you've bought a house that can kind of make it a money pit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Another one that we've sort of mentioned already, but we're going to explore a little bit more here is you confuse wants with needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you. Yes, me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, me too.
And do you really want Ted Cruz to find you maxing out your credit card to pay for brunch? Because he will make fun of your millennial behavior. And then you're going to get pissed. And then he's going to tweet and be a jerk about it. And then you're going to tweet about it. And during all this tweeting, you could be making a monthly budget or subscribing as a Patreon member to our podcast. And those would be better choices than getting into a Twitter war with a clown like Ted Cruz. See, we saved you time, strength, and money, and you should become a Patreon member.
So another reason that this sucks is because you might have student loan debt. And this is one that hits home for me pretty hard. So,
ouch. Ugh, gut punch.
This one's rough. So this one's a little bit tricky because it is undeniable that loan companies prey on the eager, naive, and innocent minds of high school graduates, giving them more money. We know that. It's also worth having a discussion with teenagers in high school about the real impact of student loan debt in the same way that we should educate them about car and home loans and credit debt. There should be some financial discussions around this that's a little bit more than an online training that people skim through. So I don't know if you went through that when you were doing, or if you took on student loans that were, but you do this quick training, like this read through, and then you disagree, and it's like, I just want to get this loan so I can go to school. Like, and so people typically don't do that. Now, there is a responsible way to approach all of the above. But each one can become an inescapable trap, you know, the likes of a Saw movie. And let me tell you, digging a key out from behind your eyeball would be far easier than dealing with Nelnet, you know, or Navient even. Like any of those, I would much rather dig a key from behind my eyeball.
Spoiler alert for the first Saw movie, I guess.
I think maybe the second one, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of keys and eyeballs in those movies. A lot of queasiness in those movies.
Gross.
So gross.
And I mean, we all agree, I think, on the absurdities of the exorbitant costs of college these days. And we could open up debates about things we can't control, like wages and cost of living after graduating so-called useless degrees,
mm-hmm.
and the abuse of paying adjunct faculty crap wages. Also, that colleges have only increased the cost because student loans are handed out so abundantly. But we won't open that discussion today.
Nope.
Maybe ever. We'll see.
I think that's a big thing to unpack. It's a lot to unpack.
It is. And also, again, personally troublesome. So
yes,
maybe
yes.
I just need to face those demons. I'd be unclear what our angle is. Whatever. These problems exist. Maybe one day they'll change. But your financial responsibility must be determined from the here and now. Unfortunately, this might involve some sacrifice if you truly want to pursue that education. It's a decision we all have to make. It's a decision not all of us get to make because of the circumstances we're in.
Mm-hmm.
You get to decide whether more immediate sacrifice, for example, working a side job, living at home, completing core classes at community college, taking classes online, etc., makes sense, or the later sacrifice, for example, after graduating, avoid tempting brunches in the city, drive a used car, live in a cheap tiny apartment with six friends. Imagine your life as an episode of Pawn Stars, and the best I can do guy offers you the choices. Pick your poison.
It's a whole system of problems. So we will not unpack student loans and student loan forgiveness and all that, which, you know, if they decided to forgive all the student loans, it'd still be only a fraction of the military budget. So, but that's neither here nor there. We won't get into that. Now, you know, another part of this too is you're paying too much rent. So many TV shows paint an impractical image of what living on an average budget means. For those who missed it, Ross and Monica's grandmother owned their apartment, so they probably paid next to nothing in rent. So that's why they had that really beautiful, that huge apartment with all those rooms and all that in New York. Now, unfortunately, this is definitely a pipe dream for city folk today. Folks who grew up watching Friends might be surprised to find out that the Joey Tribbianis of the world would actually be able to afford not very much when it comes to the New York type of apartment. I have friends who live in New York and they pay more than I pay in my mortgage, and they live with three other people in a smaller apartment.
Yeah, I think what you'd pay for in rent to sleep outside under the stairs in like a rundown apartment building in New York or San Francisco, you could buy like a mansion in sort of the sticks of rural US.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
Location, location, location. All right, last one that we're going to tackle is food.
Yeah, of course.
Stop eating food. Just, you don't need it.
Yeah, just become kidding. A breatharian.
Yeah, exactly. It's eating out, specifically restaurants, eating out a lot, doing it. If you have listened to the show before and you've heard Alan's notes, you know that at some point during an episode, we're going to talk about avocado toast. Alan's got, he's got beef with the avocado toast.
Yeah, he really does. I don't know if it's so much with the toast itself, but maybe the argument that avocado toast is bankrupting the United States.
Yeah.
That's maybe his snark view on it.
And I understand, like, it is absurdly expensive. You're paying like the cost of a meal for a piece of bread with sliced fruit on it. But
yeah,
even Alan says here, the avocado toast millennial thing will never get old as a joke, but it might have merit if you're ordering lunch every day at the office, getting Starbucks in the morning, ordering any and everything to your door during the evenings, the DoorDash and Grubhub and Uber Eats and all that, Postmates. If the cheapest part of your diet is a $10 bottle of Prosecco, you might want to consider a change. It's just all we're saying.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Point is, it isn't economical. It isn't healthy. There are lots of reasons not to do it. All it really saves you is time and effort. Granted, those are important variable things, but sometimes your time and effort is not worth the cost.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's worth learning to cook. It's actually really fun, and it's actually super easy when you get into it. Making a broth, making a stew, learning how to make risotto. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you can do that's like actually very easy that looks more complex than it is. And there are infinite number of resources online, both with recipes and how-to videos that you can revamp your entire eating habit. You might even find that your homemade meals are more delicious on top of being cheaper. And there's nothing better than the social reinforcement that comes from heating up your breakfast or lunch in the microwave at work and your coworker saying, "Holy crap, what's that?" And responding with, "Just something I made last night, no big deal." I actually really love cooking. Like, it's a lot of fun. And one thing that I've learned is it's actually much cheaper to prepare meals and to cook at home, and it can be much healthier than it would be to go eat out all the time. Because you'll hear the argument like eating healthy is more expensive. It's actually not, if you plan it right.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, your coworker, just to go back on the point that you made of heating your stuff up in the microwave, that I've definitely had the experience being the person who walks by and said like, wow, that smells really good. Mm-hmm. But they might also be saying that if you're microwaving fish, which just don't.
Yeah. That's just mean. It's mean.
Just don't. I don't even think the person who's microwaving wants it.
Like, no, no.
This is it's a lose situation.
It's lose for everybody. It's bad. Yeah. It's real bad.
This is lose for the person making lunch. This is lose for the people who have to smell. This is lose for the fish. This is a lose situation. All right. Here's some key tips for mastering this skill. First, find a cheap produce market. All the veggies and fruits that you need for a bargain. You can go from one store and pay literally 10 times more for the exact same item from the same food distribution company the next store over.
Yeah.
So you might just look at the price of things and just notice like, hey, this apple seems like it's costing $11. That maybe is more than I would normally pay for an apple. And then go to the store where they don't charge you that much money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Another one too is that instead of a few $18 salads next week, get a couple cookbooks and subscribe to a few channels on YouTube. And here's some suggestions specifically from Alan. So first is the book Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Salman Nosrat. And it's associated with the Netflix series that you can go check out too. So if you have a Netflix subscription, then great. If not, just go grab this book.
There's also Cook This Book by Molly Baz. She revolutionizes QR code linking to helpful how-to videos for some additional tips.
There's also the books Nothing Fancy and Dining Out by Allison Roman and her associated YouTube channel and email newsletter. As Alan says, her recipes are insanely good and will impress anyone you have over.
For those of you who are maybe following a different, more specific diet, I also would highly recommend there is called Youngman Cooking, Y-E-U-N-G, I believe is how it's spelled. It's a YouTube channel and he has two books. He has a lot of plant-based ramen and other soup recipes. And I have so far loved pretty much everything that he has ever come up with and promoted on that channel.
I recommend a book called Thug Kitchen. I believe they changed the title of the book for cultural reasons. I can't remember what they've changed it to, or they're in the process of changing it.
Okay.
But it's called Thug Kitchen, Cook Like You Give a Fuck. And it's all vegan recipes. And it's actually really super easy and really, really good.
100% second that recommendation. That's a very, very good cookbook.
Yeah.
All right. One more quick break for some ads. We'll be right back.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I hope those ads were good for you too. All right, so we've now covered why we're bad at this. Let's go ahead and wrap this up with what you can do to get better. The tips that we're about to list are broad, of course, but I think take any little piece of wisdom or information from this that feels necessary. I mean, we've already given a few, I think, but a lot of these are combined with general suggestions to start as early as possible. Every dollar you save now becomes more valuable later on when it's either matured into money, where it grows old and it develops a sense of personality and identity, or it comes in like clutch and during a desperate moment. So whether you're collecting interest in your savings or it's all stuffed under your mattress, the money that you save could really be a lifeline down the road. So here are some things to help move you in that direction if that's where you would like to be.
Yes. So number one, change spending habits and set goals. So the first thing you should start doing is start to track spending each day, evaluate with a breakdown of categories at the end of the month and see kind of what you're spending money on, how often you're spending money on, and how much you're spending.
Now, Alan also recommends get a filing cabinet. That's apparently if you would like to go the route of paper and holding on to documents. I am a huge fan of scanning documents or having them sent I prefer to have my receipts texted to me or sent electronically via email or something. And if I don't do that, then I'd prefer to scan them and then keep digital copies so I don't have to have a file cabinet. But otherwise, whatever it is, organize your life.
Yeah. And then track your spending. So some banking and credit apps will show you a breakdown of your spending habits, but there are also many other free apps that achieve the same and help you set financial goals. And this can be a super effective form of self-management to utilize if you have access to that type of technology.
Another one, very, very important, maybe the most important thing on here is destroy your debt.
Mm-hmm.
Pay it down as much as it hurts. Get rid of it. Like, it is just a cancer eating away at your finances.
Yeah.
Every dollar you pay off now saves you countless later in potential interest. For those people who have student loans, who have been making payments while student loan payments have been halted, you have saved yourself so much money and interest. It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I really took that on during the pandemic as well, as it's ongoing with the student loan payments being on hold and just making as many payments as I can afford to make, because the amount I've saved more in interest now than I've actually put in as money that toward those loans.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It really makes a huge difference. Number three on our list is learn to play the system. So with credit cards, if you can use them responsibly and pay off your balance monthly, there are some actual benefits and rewards you can get from using certain credit cards. Like, you can get like flyer miles, you can do all kinds, like you can get gas money from it. And like, it's just free. It's just basically bonus points for using their cards. Now, Chase Sapphire and Capital One have programs where if you spend a few thousand in the first couple months, your rewards points can buy you a round trip flight as far as Hawaii, Dubai, or Thailand. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's a good chunk of the way around the world. Yeah. Some of those cashback rewards, they literally actually do pay off. Again, really huge caveat here is if you sink into huge debt holes doing this, like, oh, I'm going to get this check later on, you will, but not for nearly the amount that you're spending.
Right.
So like, spend responsibly, pay them down, and you'll get these kickbacks from it that can be really helpful, just sort of bonuses.
Yeah.
So keeping that in mind. All right. Utilize pre-tax options for commuter and parking benefits or childcare if your company offers. One of the things I've found in sort of trying to understand how people acquire a lot of wealth is you'll discover a lot of people who are very wealthy have found ways to avoid paying for stuff.
Yes.
And so any time that you can do these pre-tax options and those sorts of things, you can avoid paying for stuff, like, that is going to be a huge thing down the road.
And also, you can utilize pre-tax options if your company offers them for medical costs, including an FSA account. You should probably look into the benefits of the companies or the places that you work at. They do offer, because they might have a lot of these things that are going to financially benefit you at some point.
Another one is find coupon codes online before you buy anything. A quick Google search could yield you 20% off a purchase. Sometimes you really need those shoes, but may as well get a deal on them. And I'm going to go ahead and I wish that we had this as a sponsor. We absolutely don't, but because Samuel L. Jackson told me to, I installed the Capital One shopping browser extension on my computer, and that thing legitimately works. Like, you're checking out and just say, oh, hey, here's a discount code you could apply to this. And it just does it. And you just save like 10, 15, 20% on a purchase. And all you have to do is click yes, apply this thing. And it'll find you these coupons automatically and apply them. You don't have to do anything. It'll just like show up.
That's pretty rad.
It's pretty rad. So I've actually been like really, really pleased with the Capital One shopping browser extension.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Now, number four on this is save money first. And what that means is you're going to prioritize it and make it automated. So if you have access to a 401k, have it taken out of your paycheck. If you have never had it in your checking account, you'll never be tempted to spend it. So whatever money comes out, if it's not in your bank account, you're not going to be tempted to spend it on something else, or like, you know, buy a want versus a need. And it's always going to be there for retirement on, like, later on when you need it. Or if there's an emergency, even with the withdrawal fee, you'll have that kind of bank of cash that can go into something to help save you or bail you out in a time of need.
You know, honestly, the easiest thing though is just make more money.
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
Yeah. Why aren't you making money? Obviously, this is easier said than done. In some cases, asking for a raise or switching jobs to a more lucrative position might be the way to go. It could be worth a shot. But honestly, the worst thing that happens for most people when they ask for a raise is they get told no. Now, some people are in a more precarious position where asking for a raise means you actually get let go. If you're worried about that, obviously don't do it. But a lot of times you'd be amazed what you can get away with simply asking for a raise.
Yeah.
And asking for stuff like things like that, asking for a better contribution to a 401k or more vacation time or something that you don't, again, most of the time, the worst thing that'll happen is that you get told no. That's a small price to pay because what might've also happened is they might've said, okay, how much do you want?
Right. Yeah. 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 Do yourself a favor. You should do yourself a favor and go onto the anti-work Reddit. And just like take a look at what people are recommending and suggesting, because like one of the things they'll say is like, talk to people about what wages you make at work, because sometimes that'll get you a bonus. If that's, you know, not within, it's not like a prohibited, like you're allowed to talk about your wages.
They don't want you to.
And so you should talk about that. They don't want you to, but you can. And you can find out that like, you can actually leverage that for raises and stuff like that too.
Another thing you can do here is to get a side hustle. There are a lot of reasons that this won't work for some people. Obviously, people have a lot of time commitments. They've got family commitments, etc. But if you can, there are plenty available these days. They come in all shapes and sizes. There might be one that utilizes a strength of yours. Committing to a job is not as big a commitment as the job is making to you and hiring you. It is really tough for businesses to hire people. They have to go through a lot of paperwork and a lot of rigmarole. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is like sign a thing that says you'll show up. And then if you don't, then you don't.
Yeah.
That sucks for the business. I would not recommend like screwing people over by doing this.
Yeah.
But you could have like a temporary side gig thing. And who knows, maybe the side hustle will end up being your primary gig.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
driving for Lyft is a career.
Yeah, I was gonna say, former host of the show is doing quite well working in videography at this point in time. And that was kind of a side hustle for him for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Number six on this list is invest your money. And what that means is, if you can find a 401k or a 403b, if your company offers it, please go ahead and do that. Even a small amount. We're not going to tell you what a small amount is by our standards because it only matters by yours. So it's all contextual. But a small amount can turn into something bigger one day. If you're able to part with it, you know, a little bit of time pre-tax, you can just kind of put it away and save yourself a little bit of time.
This can include, I think, and this is not part of the notes, but this definitely can include things like a lot of banks will offer savings accounts with really high interest that you can't take them out of. CDs are an example of this, IRAs, Roth IRAs. These are accounts that are really high interest. So if you sock even a little bit of money into some of those accounts, that means, again, you can't touch it for a while, but when it comes out, it's going to have a lot more in it than it went going in.
Yeah.
And then you'll not only have the money that you save, but the interest that it's earned by being saved. So there's another it is an investment to do that. And it can be one that's really useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can also use apps like Robinhood if your company doesn't offer investment opportunities, but this might warrant some YouTube on how-tos and some heavy self-control. Robinhood is built to look overly fun, like a social media app. It hopes that you'll pour more and more money into it. Just invest responsibly. Don't fall into fad stock. And then they're also like just related to that, but there are, I think a lot of times investing a small amount in startup companies can be really helpful for some people. Down the road, usually what happens is you at least get your money back. If not, you make a profit.
Yeah.
I think relatively few people walk away from those investments at a loss. It can happen. And so it's not a guarantee, but I think you usually at least will make your money back.
Yeah.
On that, there is something I've been wanting to look into as an organization for our podcast, that is, you can sort of set up these groups where people do microloans for businesses, and it can be as little as like a couple $100. That loan goes to a business, and then they pay you back with interest, and that really, really helps get that business off the ground, and you make money by helping those people.
Yeah.
I think it's called Kiva, maybe, or something like that. I'm going to look into this, but it's like a whole thing, so it seems really cool.
I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do this. And part of it is also being patient and knowing how to do it the right way. You know, it's not going to pay off tomorrow. That's what investments are all about. Like, you have to kind of pay into it and like, you know, let it kind of seed and grow and all that. So another one too, number seven on this list is, don't be seduced by the lottery. I live in the state of Florida. And in Florida, there's a lot of discussion around the lottery and scratch-off tickets and the billions of dollars that can be made. But The Atlantic indicates that lotteries are a, quote, $70 billion government financing initiative disproportionately funded by the poor, end quote. It preys upon low-income earners who, instead of putting $200 per year away in safe investment options, low risk, low reward, they put $200 or more into high risk, high reward lottery tickets that very rarely pay out. At all. Putting all of your faith into Powerball is not your best option. Sorry, folks. Like, you have a very low chance of winning. Even in a state where like the lottery is kind of a big deal and lightning strikes happen all the time, I'm like 10 times more likely to get hit by a bolt of lightning.
Come to Nevada, go gambling here. We've got slot machines in every gas station.
I think that's also bad advice. Yeah.
Yes. No. Gambling is also a fast way to lose a lot of money. It is fun. And like, I think the way that I would, gambling is fun. I like that it's so easily accessible here, but here's the thing that I found works the best for me that I would recommend is treat it as if it is entertainment. Have a certain amount that you're willing to pay for the entertainment, and that is it.
Yes.
So like, if you were to go in gambling, like take a $20 or maybe a $50 bill or something like that, and you say, when this is gone, I'm done.
Yes.
And if you do happen to make that money back, pocket your original investment and then gamble off of what you've made.
Yes.
And then if that's gone, then you came in just the same way as you left. And if you like make a little bit extra money, cool, good for you. But like, treat it as an entertainment with a limit on how much you're going to spend.
Absolutely. I won $10 in Vegas and spent it on a cup of coffee.
Nice.
At Starbucks. No, I'm just kidding. I definitely pocketed it. Once I was like up, I was like, I'm not risking this. I'm horrible at gambling.
Yeah, I got weirdly lucky and won like $400 on a slot machine once, and I immediately cashed out. I was like, paid my rent this month. I mean, not
yeah,
all
there
of
you
it,
go.
But paid some of my rent this month.
yeah, for sure.
Beauty of living in Nevada. Come to Nevada. It's great.
It's beautiful there.
In certain places, for sure. No, Nevada's I really like Nevada. It's good state. All right, last thing here before we get into some of our sort of final considerations and take-homes is you can reward yourself. Like we said at the very top of this, you can't take it with you, as the saying goes. At some point, you'll reach a time in your life where it's time to spend a bit of the money that you saved. Whether it's something small, like a new PlayStation, or something massive, like a new iPhone, or a down payment on a house or a yacht, it's okay to finally get there. It might hurt to see that account balance suddenly plummet, but if you've reached your goal, you've got your goal, it's awesome. Congratulations on your success. Now go enjoy your John Deere ride-on mower and a snowblower that never works when you need it to. You're officially a homeowner.
Welcome.
Yeah. And you know, I think inside of that too, for a lot of people, there's just so many different motives for why you want to save. I know a lot of people who their primary thing is save up money so that they can impart that money to their kids. That's great.
Yeah.
Like if that's where you want to be, then awesome. And then you teach them to save their money. And like, it just means that your family always has emergency funds. They've always got a backup. They're always at least secure. That can be a really good strategy too.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends again, why that's why we can't necessarily say one thing for everybody.
Yeah. Future host of the show, Daniel Craig, former James Bond.
That's right.
Is vehemently against handing down inheritances. He's not handing any of his money to his kids.
Okay, well, he doesn't get to talk about money management on
the episode. Yeah, then. We'll set up like a timeline for the show after we leave that when he's on the show, he won't do finance how-tos.
Yeah, he'll do some exercise how-tos, though.
Yeah. Stunt how-tos.
Yeah, stunt how-tos, exactly. So I know we're getting close to our time on definitely to finish and wrap this up, but let's talk about, I think, some considerations around this. There's a lot to unpack by way of understanding psychologically how to manage money. One cannot ignore the fact that when you have a delayed versus immediate sort of outcome, that people tend to go toward the immediate one, and how one's sensitivity to either one of those options might impact their financial behavior. Similarly, a history of education and being taught how to manage your money and be responsible with it is imperative for one to demonstrate to be able to make choices and make good economic decisions that are going to help you as an adult. Sadly, these skills really haven't entered the forefront of general education beyond sort of a fringe mention here and there, raising the question of how potentially and whether or not curricula should be modified to promote financial planning in some capacity, or again, if society benefits from some nefarious conspiracy to keep many Americans skating on the edge. Let's leave the debate to the Brooklyn bloggers who brunch. The rest of us have to work tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot to unpack within this. And ultimately, what we're talking about is not necessarily financial responsibility, but financial skills.
Yeah.
Right? Like budgeting skills, financial wealth management, money management. These are all behaviors that you can engage in a particular context. And so part of this is decision making. Part of this is problem solving. There's a lot of complexity within this. And there's a lot of stressors that go along with financial stability versus financial instability. There's a lot of stressors that go on with, you know, when you're in a situation where you're financially unstable, the amount of work that you do to catch up, the amount of stressors that go along with debt. I think I've gotten past a tipping point when it comes to my student loans where it is so much at this point where I can't even be stressed about it because it's just too much to even fathom.
That's another strategy, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, my strategy for a little bit was just die and then I won't have to pay it off, which is like horrible. But there is a lot to unpack in this that we can't unpack in a single episode. What we can talk about is there are some behaviors that you can engage in and engage in today. The first thing is if you're not financially sound or you don't have those skills, start with taking some classes or look at some how-tos from reputable sources on financial planning and whatnot. Start with itemizing your budget. Start with gathering data on what it is to, like, what money you're spending, what your bills are, what your finances are. Start there and see where that leads you, because that's a better place to start than just spending money at random and kind of going into debt as a result of that.
It feels like we have already entered into take homes.
Yeah.
I feel like that sounds like a take home to me, if that sounds okay to you.
Yeah, no, that's good with me.
I think that I would categorize ways of approaching this from two angles. One is you have your antecedent prevention measures and then your reaction measures.
Yeah.
And prevention is going to be the best thing you can do in the long run. It is the cheapest, easiest thing that you can do.
Yep.
And for prevention, what I would the recommendations I think that we've pulled from this and that I would leave you with is stop. Don't give yourself the opportunity to spend money. I mean, obviously you need to spend money that you need to spend money on things that are essential for living. But for outside of the budget for things that you need to have, if you lock away that money in a savings account, in an investment, in retirement funds, et cetera, that won't feel like lost money and you won't have an opportunity to spend it. And then you'll be so grateful later when it comes back around. And let's just say in the off chance, something terrible happens and like you are not around to see the fruits of your labor. Other people that you love will.
Yeah.
Like you can leave those things to them and then somebody else is going to be so much better off. And so like, it's just a big win situation there. So I think that that's where I leave on prevention. I think the reactive things that we sort of mentioned were pay down your debts.
Yeah.
Get out of credit card debt is going to be a huge one. And prioritize, you know, when you're already in a situation where you need to be managing money, figure out how to prioritize those things because some things can wait and some things can't.
I think it's important to understand that there are emotional stressors that go along with talking about money and finances as it is. And there is a cultural piece where in the United States, people don't talk about their wages, their debts, their stuff like that. And so now these financial stressors and these monetary stressors become kind of like hidden pains, right? And so it is worth finding resources where you can talk about this stuff and share this stuff and seek advice for this stuff because there are millions of people that are in the same space that you are, guaranteed. And so it is good to have kind of connect to those resources and not make it a hidden shame.
Yes, absolutely. One other that just occurred to me as you were speaking that is relevant to what I was saying about sort of prevention and reaction strategies is finding opportunities to get stuff for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's kind of a preventative one, but like if you can find a way to not pay for something without stealing it, but like find those like legal ways. There are lots of them. There are lots of legal ways to go about getting services or products for a discounted price or, you know, getting a raise or something like that. So find those things. Flip those coupons.
Yep. 100%.
Shall we talk about our recommendations?
Yes.
Recommendations. All right, this has been an episode of recommendations, so You may have been inundated, but I think we'll leave you with a couple non sequitur recommendations, some things unrelated to the topic of money. Mm-hmm. My recommendation is going to be Dexter New Blood, the new season that is out. I guess it's technically season one of what is now a new series. Same characters, same premise, all of that.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the original, I think that you'll enjoy this one. It has a lot of the same, I think, issues as the first season run did. But for the most part, I actually find that I'm enjoying it. I feel like it's well done. So I'm going to make that recommendation. It is available on Showtime.
Dexter is so good.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the new ones yet, but the original series was really, really good.
If you liked the original series, then I think you'll like this one.
Good. Okay, cool. All right. I like that recommendation. My recommendation is a book. I just finished a book called The Philosopher's Flight by Tom Miller. And I had picked up this book through something called the Book of the Month Club. And this is something that like you pay like $20 into a thing or like I think it's like $15 or $20. And they send you a book every month. And it's like usually like unknown authors and you can pick by genre. They give you like 5 books that you can select from. And this was one of the books I got. And so the book is about a young man. His name is Robert Weeks, and he is an empirical philosopher. And essentially what it is they use science and magic together to do practical things. So like he is what's called a hoverer, so he can fly. And they use sigils to kind of like, you know, manifest this magic. But they do all these things like calculations, how to land, like flight times, like they do really cool things. And so it's very practical magic. It takes place between World War I and World War II. And the whole story is that Robert Weeks wants to become part of the rescue and evacuation division of the military. However, this is kind of a false dream for him because sigilists are all women. all the philosophers are females, and that's kind of the world. So like all males are kind of like ostracized and segregated. So it's a really cool take on that like segregationist type of philosophy and mentality, where it's like, you know, the white male is finally kind of like getting his comeuppance. But it's a really good, easy read. If you're a fan of stuff like in the Harry Potter realm and like magic and stuff like that, it's a really easy, really quick. It's actually a really great story. There's a whole section of people called the Trenchers, you know, the anti-philosophers. So it's like, you know, there's like the religious opposition that are like hyper-violent. So they're like the KKK type of fold to the philosophers. So it's really interesting read. So I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. That sounds like fun. Is a book a month enough for you?
Well, that's why I stopped getting that, because it was not enough.
Okay. Let's say, like, I feel like you'd be done by a couple days in and then you'd need a new book.
Yeah. Well, this was something I had gotten a few years ago. And it was like, people who are like what Stephen King calls constant readers just have like piles of books everywhere that they haven't read. Uh-huh. That's my life.
Okay.
So it was one of those ones where I'm finally catching up on the pile of books that I haven't read.
And listeners, if you were a Patreon subscriber, you could see Shane's background and know this to be true.
Well, same thing with Abraham, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Not nearly the voracious reader you are, unfortunately. I wish that I was, but still.
It's so, a whole thing.
In case we didn't plug Patreon enough, that is something that you can do. Speaking of which, it's probably time to wrap up this episode. Yeah. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't have anything else.
You can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/WWD podcast. If you join us for as little as $1 a month, then you'll get all kinds of benefits, including things like shout outs on our episodes, access to early releases of episodes, videos of us recording, which includes a lot of like behind the scenes and banter and additional things. You could get notes that we've written that we've developed for the episodes that we use to record. All of our episodes are usually cut down a little bit, so you get unedited access to those without the sections that have been cut and all of the sort of flubs and gaffes that we make in trying to record. Mm-hmm. And because we record without a lot of times knowing all of the jokes that Alan has inserted in his notes, you also get a lot of us giggling. It's a thing.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So anyway, you can support us that way. Otherwise, you can also just leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And for those people who are like, they really like what we're up to, if you guys leave a review, that's really powerful, because oftentimes what happens is that we'll say something that makes somebody angry and they're the ones who leave reviews, and then it looks like people don't like us.
Yeah. And there's probably people that like us, I would imagine.
I think there's a couple.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have left wonderful reviews. You guys are all the best. Also, if you'd like to talk to us about your plans for money management or your suggestions for TV series or books, please reach out to us. We're available on the social media platforms. And you can always email us and talk to us directly at info@wwdpodcast.com. I think that is all we have for you. But before I go, mentioning those Patreons, as I had mentioned, the people who help keep the show going. Thank you, Amanda, Kathleen, Joshua, Justin, Justine, Kim, Kostia, Layla, Megan, Mike M, Mike T, and Shauna. If you'd like to join that list, you can join us on Patreon. And I think that is all that I have for us. Anything else?
I got nothing.
All right, this is Abraham.
And this is Shane.
We're out.
See ya.
You've been listening to Why We Do What We Do. Why We Do What We Do is supported in part by our amazing patrons. Thank you. If you like what you heard, consider becoming a patron by heading to patreon.com/WWDWWDpodcast. You can also rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, or share this episode with your friends. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Find us at WWDWWDpodcast on your favorite social media platforms. You can learn more about this and other episodes by going to WWDWWDpodcast.com. There, you'll find links as well as detailed and shareable show notes. Why We Do What We Do is researched and produced by Abraham, Ryan O, Shane, and Miranda. Artwork and logo design by Andrew Pollock at nogdesigns.com. Video and production assistance from Tyler Brassier, with music courtesy of Justin Greenhouse. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have an awesome day.